I imagine the next regime would be oligarchy, the regime based on property qualifications, where the rich rule and a poor man is excluded from power. Do we have to explain how the change from timarchy to oligarchy first takes place? Yes. The regime we described is destroyed by the strong room full of gold which each man possesses. They start by inventing extravagances for themselves, and this leads them to bend the laws, since neither they nor their wives are prepared to obey them. That's likely enough. The next step, I suppose, will have been for them to start eyeing one another and competing with one another, and in this way they would reduce the whole population to their own level. Very likely. After that, presumably, they would become still further involved in making money. And the higher the value they put on that, the lower the value they would put on virtue. Isn't virtue always at odds with wealth in this way? As if they were in the two scales of a balance, always trying to move in opposite directions. Exactly, he said. And as wealth and the wealthy are more valued in a city, so goodness and the good are valued less. Obviously. What is valued at any particular time becomes the common practice. What is not valued is neglected. Yes. Eventually, then, they stop being competitive and ambitious and become mercenary and money-loving. They praise and admire the rich man and admit him to positions of power. The poor man they treat with contempt. Absolutely. At that point, they pass a law defining the oligarchic regime. They establish a wealth qualification, larger in an extreme oligarchy, smaller in a more moderate oligarchy, and declare that anyone whose property does not reach the prescribed value is debarred from the government. Either they put this into effect by force of arms, or else they've already established this kind of regime earlier by intimidation. Isn't that how it's done? It is. So that, more or less, is how it becomes established. Yes, he said. But what are the characteristics of this regime, and what are the kind of faults we said it possessed? Well, I said, the first fault is this very thing which defines its nature. Think what it would be like if you appointed ship's captains in this way, on the basis of a property qualification, and refused a command to a poor man, even if he was better qualified. I think it would be a sorry voyage they'd find themselves making, he said. And the same with any position of command over anything. That's certainly my opinion. With the exception of a city, or including a city. It is especially true of a city, he said, since the responsibility a city brings is the greatest and the most demanding. This would be one great failing, then, possessed by oligarchy. It looks like it. What about its second failing? Is that any less serious? What would it be, this second failing? That a city of this kind is bound to be two cities, not one. A city of the poor and a city of the rich, living in the same place but constantly scheming against one another. That is, God knows, as big a failing as the first. You must ask yourself, however, if this city isn't also the first to introduce an evil which is greater than either of these. What evil is that? There is nothing to stop one person selling all his property, and a second person acquiring it. Nothing to stop the first person still living in the city after selling his property without being one of the elements which make up the city. He is neither businessman nor skilled worker, neither cavalryman nor infantryman, just a poor man, what they call a man without means. Yes, he said. This city is the first to introduce this evil. Certainly, in cities with oligarchic regimes, this kind of thing is not prohibited in any way. If it were, you wouldn't get one group of people who were very rich and the rest living in complete poverty. That's right. And here's another point to think about. At the point where someone like this was rich and spending all his money, was he even at that time any use to the city for the purposes we've been talking about? Or was it an illusion, his being one of the rulers? Was he, in truth, neither a ruler nor a servant of the city, but merely a spendthrift? Yes, he said, it was an illusion. He was nothing more than a spendthrift. Do you want us to say, then, that just as a drone born in a cell is a blight on the hive, so a man like this is born as a drone in a household and as a blight on the city? By all means, Socrates. Well, then, Adamantus, is it the case that God has made the winged variety of drone all stingless, whereas of these two-legged drones, some are stingless, but others have very nasty stings? Do those who finish up as beggars in their old age come from the stingless class, and all those who are labelled criminals come from the class with stings? Yes, that's true, he said. It's obvious, then, that anywhere in a city you see beggars, there you can expect to find a secret nest of thieves, pickpockets, robbers of temples, and all these sorts of malefactors. Yes, that's obvious. And don't you find beggars in cities with oligarchic regimes? Yes, practically the whole population, apart from the rulers. Can we avoid the conclusion, then, that in these cities there is a large number of criminals with stings, and that the authorities systematically and forcibly keep them under control? No, we can't, he said. And can we not say that the cause of people like this coming into existence there is lack of education, together with poor upbringing and constitutional arrangements? Yes, we can. Well, that's roughly what the oligarchic city would be like, and those are the evils it would contain, plus some others besides, perhaps. Yes, that's about it. Then that's another regime we can regard as dealt with, the one known as oligarchic, whose rulers are chosen on the basis of a property qualification.